So we're holding in Chagiga on page 44, the paragraph labeled Daf Vav Amud Beis, middle of Os Vav. The Gemara is discussing the point there. The beginning of Masechta Chagiga talks about the Chagiga, talks about the Korban Chagiga that you bring when you come to the Beis Mikdash on the Shalosh Regalim, as well as the Olas Re'iyah, where we know the Torah says, V'lo yiro fanei reikam, when you're coming to the Beis Mikdash, you can't be empty-handed. So in that connection, then the Gemara, you have a machlokes with Shammai with Hillel, how much, what's the minimum that each of them has to be worth? And you have a Shammai saying that the Olas Re'iyah should be worth more, and Beis Hillel saying that the Shlomim should be worth more. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions that the underlying machlokes is whether before Matan Torah the Jewish people brought only Korbanos Shlomim, or did they also bring Korbanos Olah? So the Gemara says, Tanya, Olas Tamid Hasuya Bahar Sinai, when the Pasuk says about the Korban Tamid, the constant Olah that was offered by Har Sinai. So what does that mean? What Olah are we talking about that was offered on Har Sinai? Rabbi Loza Omer, Maaseh Nemrin B'Sinai. So Rabbi Loza says it means the rules of how to bring a Korban Olah were set on Har Sinai, like the rest of the Torah, V'hi'atzmo le'korva, but it itself was not brought. Now, we do know that definitely before Matan Torah, they brought Korbanos, because the Pasuk says at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, where it gives more information about what happened in the days before and during Matan Torah, it says over there that the Na'areh B'nei Yisrael, the young men, which is the Bechorim, came and brought Olos and Shlomim. So the question is that, so the question is, what kind of Olah were they bringing? So Rashi explains, Rabbi Lazar holds then that the Rabbi Yezer, maybe it's supposed to be, holds that the Olah they brought is not the Korban Tamid, but rather not the Korban Tamid, but rather the equivalent of an Olah Sriya. It's Shavuos, which is one of the Shalosh Regalim anyway, but more to the point is they're seeing Hashem's presence at Matan Torah, and therefore they brought an Olah in honor of that. So according to Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar, we're saying that the rules for bringing the Korban Talmud were brought at Har Sinai, were given at Har Sinai, but the actual Korban Talmud itself was not brought at Har Sinai, only later on. Rabbi Akiva rather disagrees and says that no, they started bringing the Korban Todah at that point. That was the very first Korban Todah that was brought, not Korban Todah, Korban Tamid rather, that was brought. And after that, it continued as a continuous thing that they were bringing it. So it would have been on the Mizbeach that they built there by Har Sinai until the Mishkan was built. And after that, it would be on the Mizbeach and the Mishkan. And then they continued it, Rabbi Akiva is saying, throughout the 40 years in the desert. So then Rabbi Akiva says, so what do we do with the pasuk that says the Navi Amos is criticizing the Jewish people, as we have many of the Nevi'im criticize the Jewish people that you're bringing korbanos but you don't have the right intentions in mind. Here the idea of a korban is that you should be chobav merutza, that Hashem should be as favorable to you as he was before the chet. And here what you're doing is you're doing Averis, and you're thinking like you're bribing Hashem with your Korbanos or something. We have Yeshaya telling off the Jewish people for it, and other Nevi'im, and here we have Amos doing it. So Amos says, after all, you think Korbanos are the most important thing of Yiddishkeit? After all, did you Jewish people bring me Zvachim, which is Korbanos, and Minchas throughout the 40 years in the desert? Hashem is saying that no, you didn't, but you learned Torah and you did other mitzvahs then. So you see that bringing korbanos is not the be all and end all of Yiddishkeit. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Akiva is saying, the pasuk is clearly saying, therefore, that the Jewish people didn't bring korbanos regularly throughout the 40 years in the desert. So Rabbi Akiva says, then how do we understand if we say that they were bringing the korban talmid every day or twice a day throughout the years in the desert? Then what do we do with that pasuk? Means it's talking about the Jewish people in general. But Shivte Shalevi Shalei Ovdra Vedizara, but Shevet Le, it means that the Jewish people in general were not able to offer those korbanos because they had worshipped the eagle. In particular, we know that the Bechorim, who brought this korban before Matan Torah, they weren't able to afterwards because they had worshipped the eagle. So Shivte Shalevi Shalei Ovdra Vedizara, Heine Kruvoisa, Shevet Levi, whereas we know none of them worshipped Vedizara, none of them were involved in the eagle, which is why when Moshe says Mila Hashem Eli, all of them gathered to him. So they're the ones who offered it. So in other words, the pasuk is saying Not that there was not Rabbi Akiva, sort of Eliezer, Rabbi Lazar would take the pasuk at face value. There were actually no regular korbanos offered during those 40 years. We have the korban before Matan Torah. We have the korbanos of the 8 days of the Miluim. We have the korban Pesach that they brought in the second year, and that's about it. We don't really find that they brought other korbanos in the desert, says Rabbi Lazar. But Rabbi Akiva is saying no, they brought the korban Tamid twice a day. But when the pasuk is saying they didn't bring korbanos regularly, it means the Jewish people in general did not only shave it late. It would mean also b'pashtos. What it would mean is that, I mean, as it is, the Yisraelim don't bring korbanos anyway, only the Kohenim do. So what it would mean b'pashtos is that unlike in later generations where everybody gives matzah shekel and they bring the korbanos from that, from those funds, here it would be that Hashem didn't want it from the rest of the people, and only Shevet Levi would contribute, and only they would be contributing to the korban tamid. So Rabbi Akiva says that's what the pasuk means. The point is, in other words, again, you have the Gemara ends up explaining then that this machlokas relates to this question about in future generations, when you have to bring an Olas Re'iyah and Shalei Chagiga, when you're coming to the Beis Mikdash, which one should be worth more? It depends on the question of whether, in fact, an Olas Re'iyah was the one brought before Matan Torah, which makes it more important, or whether that Ola that was brought was not an Olas Re'iyah, but rather a regular Korban Tamid. By the way, you have in Menachos, the Gemara mentions a similar discussion as far as the Korbanos Musaf. It talks about it in particular in connection with Shavuos, where you have the regular Korban Musaf of Shavuos, like any other Yom Tov, plus you have the Shtei Alechem with the Korbanos that come with it, which part of that is mentioned in Parshas in Chumash Vayikra, in Parshas Emor, and part of it is mentioned in Chumash Bamidbar, in Parshas Pinchas. So there's a Machlokas over there also in a Mishnah and the Gemara over there, which of them were brought in the Midbar versus which of them were brought only once they came to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, further on this question of the Nare Bnei Yisrael, the young Jewish men, the Bechorim, bringing the Korbanos before Matan Torah, whether we're talking about the Korban, or whether we're talking about an Olas Re'iyah or an Olas Tamid, as the case may be. Now, so Boda Chista Haikra Hechikstit. How do we parse that pasuk? How do we read the pasuk? The pasuk is Vayishlach Nare Bnei Yisrael. He sent the young, Moshe sent the young men among the Jewish people, Vayalu Olos. So the pasuk goes like this, without inserting anything else that the Gemara says. The actual pasuk goes like this in Parshas Mishpatim: Vayishlach Nare Bnei Yisrael, Vayalu Olos, and they offered Olos, Vayizbuchu Zvachim Shlomim, and they offered sacrifices of Shlomim LaShem to Hashem, Purim Bo. So the question is, Rav Chista says that word at the end of the pasuk, Purim, does it refer to both kinds of korbanos or just one? So do we read the pasuk Vayishlach Nare Bnei Yisrael Vayalu Olos, and we stop over there? And what would those olos be? Kvasim, they would be sheep, which in that case that would fit better with Rabbi Akiva's opinion that it was the korban tamid, because the korban tamid, of course, is a sheep. And then when it says Vayizbuchu Zvachim Shlomim LaHashem Parim, when it says they offered Parim, then that would mean only the Shlomim. So it would be, in other words, not only they brought two different types of korbanos, olos and Shlomim, but also that they brought two different types of animals: sheep for lambs for the ola, and bulls for the Shlomim. Oduma Aidi Vaidi Parim. Or maybe what the pasuk means is both of them were bulls, both the ola and the Shlomim were bulls, and that would fit better with Rebbe Lazar's opinion that they weren't the korban tamid, because the korban tamid is a sheep, not a bull. So the Gemara says the main afkamina. So why is the so what's the practical difference? This is something that happened in the past. This is something that happened by Matan Torah. So it's nice to know what happened, but why do we need a machlokas? Why do we need to understand? So okay, we can learn the pasuk either way. Why is it important for us to know what kind of animals were which korban? So the Gemara says mazutru amal pisuk time. Mazutra says that we need to know as far as assigning truck to the pasuk. Now you have like this, when you have truck on a pasuk, the truck, by the way, in the times of the Gemara, were not written down yet. They were still Baal Peh. The symbols that we have for the truck were based on the Zohar and based on other things. They existed before that, but they were written, they were Baal Peh, and they were written down only in the times of the Goyim. There is a minority opinion from the famous Medactic of Eliyahu Bacher, who says they were actually invented in the times of the Goyim, but I know as far as the Nekudas, we say Alpi Kabbalah, that they existed from the beginning. I believe the same is true as far as the Trop. Be that as it may, the point is, you need Trop regardless, but the question is, how do you assign the Trop to the Pasuk? Now, we know in the Trop, the strongest separating trap in a pasuk. Well, you have the sof pasuk at the end, you have the asnachta in the middle, which breaks it into two major parts, and then within that you have lesser, you have lesser separating trap, and you have connected trap. So now Rashi explains like this: if it means that there were two different types of animals, sheep for the ola and bulls for the shlomim, then on the words vayalu olos, on the word olos, you would have an asnachta over there, which breaks the pasuk into two, and that's in fact how we have it in our chumashim. So then it would be vayishlach is not ibn Israel vayalu olos. Stop. Separately, vayizvachu zvachim shlomim lashem parim, and that's not a problem because then the word parim refers only to the second half of the pasuk. If you say that it was all bulls, like the second possibility of Chista asked, then you shouldn't have an asnachta on the word oilos. Instead, you should have some kind of lesser separating terup. Rashi says, for example, a pashto or a revi. Rashi actually uses the expression she'en and mafsikin, that they wouldn't break it up. It's not that they don't break it up at all, but in other words, they would break it up less than an asnachta would. If the word parim refers to both kinds of korbanos, in other words, then the word oilos should have a lesser separating terup, such as a pashto or a revi, and then the asnachta would come someplace else in the pasuk. You might have, for example, that it would come after the words asnari b'nei Yisrael. So you'd have Vayishlach Moshe, Vayishlach asnari b'nei Yisrael, you'd have the asnachta there, and then the rest of the pasuk without an asnachta, and it would tell what types of korbanos they brought. Or you might have the asnachta, someplace else, whatever the point is. In other words, that you wouldn't have it on the word olos because that breaks up, that takes away the parim from olos, and then we're saying according to this possibility that no, the olos themselves were parim. So now Zutra says that's the nafkamina to know what kind of korbanos they brought. We have to know how to assign terup to the pasuk. Rav Acha b'rei d'Rava amar la'oma harei ala ola ka'ola she'ekriv Yisrael b'amid. Rav Acha b'rei d'Rava says a different answer. Suppose a person were to say, I vow to bring an ola like the kind that the Jewish people brought in the Midbar before Matan Torah. Well, then we need to know, does that mean that he has to bring a sheep, or does that mean that he has to bring a bull? So my parim havu ekvasim havu. So we need to know, were they bulls or were they sheep? So the Gemara says, teku, we really don't know. So we really don't know. So in the case of the trup, ultimately the Masorah tells us, like Rashi says, that we put the asnachta on the word snari b'nei Yisrael, on the word olos, which implies that the parim are something separate and they don't belong together with the olos. As far as the din, when a person makes such a neder, the pashtus, I guess we would say that he would have to bring both. He'd have to bring both a sheep and a bull in order to be yotze either. Ion Yaakov points out a deeper idea behind it, why in fact we would think to say that it was a bull. One point is because when by Matan Torah they were given the special ksarim, Hashem gave them the special crowns for Nase and Nishma, so therefore like they became like koyanim, so to speak, and a koyan's special korban, a koyan gadol's special korban, as we know when it comes to Yom Kippur, and when it comes to if he makes a mistake in halacha, then his special korban is a pal. One idea being that a pal represents leadership, and therefore that's appropriate for the koyan gadol. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that therefore that might be a reason. That might be a reason to think that they brought they brought Purim as their korban before Matan Torah. Tosfos also points out, by the way, that not printed here in Ein Yaakov, but you know, you have the Gemara elsewhere mentioned there are five psukim that Ein Lahem Hechra. We have a word in the middle of a pasuk, and we can't be sure which half of the pasuk it belongs to. Here, it's not really the same thing. Here, the word parim is at the end of the pasuk, and it's one or the other. But either way, no question, it belongs to the second half of the pasuk. The question is whether it belongs to the first half as well. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanan Hossam. Now we learn in the Mishnah at the beginning of Peah, which we say every day and every morning in davening, Eilu Dvarim She'en Lahem Shir. The following mitzvahs have no shir, there's no fixed amount for them. HaPeah, giving Peah, Min HaTorah, you can give even one stalk of grain or whatever it is from your field or from your vegetable plot or whatever. And your Yotze Peah, Midrabbanon, you have to give a minimum 1/60th. Bikurim, same thing, Minatora, one one fruit would be enough. Midrabanan, you have to give at least 1/60th. V'har oyun, and oyun, which is the olas re'iyah that we're talking about, but actually the Gemara goes on to discuss that there's two possible meanings of the word re'oy. It can mean the olas re'iyah, and it would mean that the olas re'iyah min haTorah has no minimum value. It could also mean, it's machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish in the Gemara, whether it means that or whether re'oyin means the mitzvah of appearing before Hashem in the Bis Mikdash on the Shalosh Regalim, that there's no shiur for it. You could come one time or you could come many, many times throughout the Yom Tov, and there's no specific amount. The machlokas basically, the Gemara explains, boils down to the question, do you have to bring a korban every time you come? Is it that every time you come to the Bis Mikdash, you have to bring a korban, you have to bring an olas re'iyah because you can't appear empty-handed? In that case, then re'oyin would mean that there's no shiur as far as the number of times you can appear, but each time has to be with a korban. Or would it mean that re'oyin means the value of the olas re'iyah, you only need to bring it once, and it has no minimum value in atar. Anyway, gmilas chasadim, there's no minimum amount for any, even the smallest act of gmilas chasadim is a great thing. But Talmud Torah, the same thing, there's no minimum. You can have the bare minimum. The Gemara even mentions in Menachos, for example, that a person, the Dievid, could just be Yotzeh by saying Shema in the morning and the evening. Well, the Gemara says, don't tell that to the Amei Aretz, because then they're going to think they don't need to learn. Anyway, the point is, so the Gemara goes on to discuss that doesn't mean they have no minimum value, doesn't mean they have no maximum value, but min haTorah, they all have a minimum value. No, it means that all of them have no minimum min haTorah either. Like we said, with Peah and Bikurim and the rest of them, min haTorah, you would be Yotze even with the smallest amount. Midrabanan, they have Shiurim. Peah 1/60th, Bikurim also 1/60th, Ra'oyan, you have Machlok, Bishama, Bishilo, how much it has to be, how much the korban has to be worth, and so forth. Okay. Further on, the Gemara says, Rabbi Levi wrong. Rabbi Levi pointed out you have a seeming contradiction between the Pesukim. Ksiv, one Pesuk says in Mishlei, Hoikar raglocha mibeis re'echa. The Pesuk says, keep your feet light, keep your feet away from the house of your friend. Now, in the simple meaning of the Pesuk, it means the Pesuk continues because he may get sick of you. Penis bach or snea. Pashat chat, it means, you know, don't be in your friend's house all the time. Sooner or later, he's going to get tired of you and kick you out. But the Gemara doesn't like that explanation, that it's Stam telling you a matter of derech eretz towards your friend. The Gemara's understanding that it means beis re'echa means the house of Hashem. Rashi points out, we find that Hashem calls the Jewish people his friends. L'man achai v'rei means that Hashem is saying, for the sake of my brothers and friends, meaning the Jewish people, adabra shalom bach. As far as Gmilas Chasadim, by the way, I forgot to mention, Tosfos points out from the Yerushalmi on Peah, on that Mishnah and Peah, that when we say Gmilas Chasadim, there's no minimum, Ein Lo Shiur, that means as far as Begufay, there is a Shiur, because you have a maximum amount officially that you can give for Tzedakah, as we know, Hamavazbez, Ayuvazbez, Yosem Echoymesh, although of course you have that point that Altadeva makes in Tanya, that when you're giving it because of to make up for fasting, for Averis, then that's different. Anyway, so when we say morning davening, Gmilas Chasadim has no shiur, there's a difference in Gmilas Chasadim B'Gufay versus Mamona. There's no maximum amount that you can do B'Gufay, and even the smallest amount B'Gufay is also valuable. Yeah. So getting back to the Gemara over here. Anyway, so Hoika Raglachom Beis Re'echa. So again, so Rashi says Hashem calls the Jewish people his friends, and therefore this pasuk in Mishlei means Shlomo is using the same metaphor to mean keep your feet away from Hashem's house. Now, why does the Gemara not just use the simple pshat that it's telling you a matter of derech eretz between you and your friend? Marasha explains because the whole Mishlei is the name of it is Mishalim, meaning, in other words, it's not just telling you the surface meaning of the pasuk. On the surface, it's telling you various things of interpersonal derech eretz or whatever, but really they're all meant as Mishalim, and among other things, they're referring to the relationship between you and Hashem. So here, when we have this pasuk, then we're meant to understand it's a metaphor for our relationship to Hashem. Another point, Marasha says, if it just meant the simple meaning, don't be all the time visiting your friend's house, then why the expression raglocha? Raglocha suggests something having to do with the sholosh regal. Anyway, the point is, the pasuk seems to be saying that you shouldn't make a habit of visiting Hashem's house too often. On the other hand, you have a pasuk in Tehillim where David HaMelech says, I will come to your house with oilus, implying that you're welcome in the Bismikdash anytime. As far as the Laman Achavereya, by the way, Marsha points out, not like Rashi, who learns that Laman Achavereya is Hashem speaking. Marsha says, no, that's David speaking. He's calling the Jewish people Achavereya. But we find Hashem calls the Jewish people Rayosi in Shir HaShirim. Either way, the point is Reyacha over here means the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem. So again, so you have one pasuk implying that you shouldn't be over-familiar and you shouldn't be coming that often to the Beis HaMikdash. On the other hand, you have a pasuk where David is saying, I will come to your house with Olus. So the answer is like Kasha, Kan b'chatois v'ashomis, Kan b'olus v'shlom. Depends what kind of korban we're talking about. If we're talking about that you're coming with a chatas or an oshem, don't make it happen too often. Better you should stay away from doing averus in the first place, so you don't have to bring a chatas or an oshem. So that's the kind of thing that Shlomo means in Mishle when he says hoika raglacham beis reach. Plan your steps, do things appropriately, such that when you're coming on the Sholosh Regalim, you shouldn't have to be bringing chatois v'ashamos for the various averus that you did throughout the year. And ba'olos shlomim, as opposed to when it comes to an olo or shlomim, those by all means, those are benedu nedava. Those are you bringing because you want to be in Hashem's good graces and because you want to give Hashem a gift. So by all means, bring those whenever you want. Okay, an oila, yav, strictly speaking, is sometimes brought for certain kinds of averus, the kinds that otherwise wouldn't be chayav a korban. But so either we're talking about an oila over here that's not required at all, where a person brings it completely voluntarily, or we're talking about even those kinds, but after all, a person is not required to bring them al pi halacha, so therefore it's something voluntary, and Hashem appreciates that. Kanyan, I mean, we learn similarly in Braise, exactly that distinction. The pasuk about staying away from your friend's house is talking about bringing chatois and hashamos, which you should take steps to avoid doing that in the first place. Maybe not. Maybe the pasuk is saying even olus shlomim, you shouldn't be bringing that often. Nope, sure, omer over base chabolus, but you have dovin amalach's pasuk. I will come to your house with olos. How do olos or shlomim amr? So we see that it's fine to bring olos and also shlomim. He only mentions olos, but fine. We understand that shlomim also being like an olos, that's that you bring it benedur and a dover, is in the same category. So it comes out what we said before, that the distinction is don't. And Shlomo is warning you, take steps to begin with, that you don't end up having to come too often to Hashem's house with chatois v'ashomes, but olos or shlomo is not a problem in the first place, because those you're bringing voluntarily. And those you're not bringing, more to the point, those you're not bringing specifically because of an aveir. Worth mentioning in that connection, by the way, you know, that Amma mentions, we know that when you bring a chatas or an oshem and you do smicha on it, then you say vidui for whatever the particular aveira was. On the other hand, when it comes to a shlomim, the Rambam says, then you don't, there's nothing to say vidui on. Instead, you say divrei shiras v'tishbachos. You say praises to Hashem for whatever the good thing that he did for you, for which you're thanking him with a shlomim. And therefore, so Hashem appreciates that kind of thing. So by all means, do that as often as possible. Mishnah says, if a person has a lot of members of his family who are going to be eating korbanos, and let's say he doesn't have very much spare money, maybe shlomim merubim va'olus mu'atim. So then he should bring more shlomim and fewer olus. He does have to bring at least one of each, but since he needs meat for his family, and after all, ein simcha ela b'basar, so he should be bringing more shlomim and fewer olus. So that way he's not straining his finances to bring more olus, which are going to get completely burnt, and he has plenty of meat for simchas yomta for his family. If he has the other way around, lots of he's wealthy and he has very few people eating, maybe olus merubim, so shlomim watim, then the other way around, let him bring more olus and fewer shlomim. If he has little of both, not very much money, and a small family, al zenem, mar kesef, shtei kesef, that's the figures that it mentioned in the first Mishnah, where you have the machlokas v'shama v'shilo, how much the olus re'iyah and the shama chagiga have to be worth, where there you just bring the minimum size olus re'iyah and the minimum size shama chagiga. And if you have a lot of both, you're wealthy and you have a large family, al zenema. Well, there the pasuk says at the end of this week's parasha, when it talks about aliyah leregel, when the korbanos you bring, ish kmatnas yodeh, each person should give according to what his hand is able to give. in accordance with the bracha that Hashem gave you. So that would be then don't stick to the minimums, then bring the biggest and most expensive animals that you can, and as many of them as you can. So Rashi explains in particular, you bring in many olas because ishkamat nasiyadei. Marsha says that actually no, ishkamat nasiyadei really refers that you have more shlomim, and then you're giving them and then you're giving them out to your family and your guests and all of that. He also points out why the expression ishkimat nasiyadei. Just say ishmat nasiyadei. What's the chof come in for? So he says what it means is like this: the pasuk is talking about two people. You can have a person who's not very rich, but he wants to give as much of his money as he can to Hashem on behalf of Korbanos. So then he should give ish kemat nasiyadei. He should give according to what his hand gives. He may not be wealthy enough that it's normal for him to do that, but nevertheless, he wants to give according to what he sees fit. Gizunta hate like. And then the second half of the pasuk, Kibir Kas Hashem Alekecha, is talking about where he actually has been blessed by Hashem with wealth, where therefore, by all means, in accordance with, commensurate with his wealth, he should be bringing larger and more expensive korbanos. Okay. Further on, you have a Mishnah that talks about now some things in life, you know, you miss them, you can make them up later. But a classic example, of course, being, you know, Pesach Sheni, Nishtok and Farfalim. On the other hand, the fact is that there are some things, you miss them, you don't have another opportunity. One example, the first one the Mishnah mentions, is as far as these korbanos of Yom Tov. You have the 7 days of the Yom Tov, eight in the case of Sukkos and Shmini Atzeres. You also have seven in connection with Shavuos, which, as we know, that's why the few days after Shavuos we don't say Tachnun. During that time, you can be bringing your Olos and your Shlomim. If you miss that, there's no making up for it later. You can bring more korbanos next time around, but it doesn't make up for the fact that you missed out last time. So the Mishnah goes on to mention that there are other examples of that. There are other examples in life of where the pasuk says "Ma'uvas lo yuchal liska," and there's something that's crooked and can't be made straight. So the Gemara expands on that. Tanya, "Ma'uvas lo yuchal liska," and Ketzad. What does it mean? A crooked thing that can't be made straight. A person missed saying Shema in the morning or in the evening, or davening Shemana Esrei in the morning or in the morning or in the evening, meaning any of the three tefillos. So that's it. There's no making it up afterwards. Later on, he'll say Shema b'kavana. Later on, he'll daven b'kavana. It still doesn't make up for the fact that he missed it that time, as the Alter Rebbe points out at the beginning of Igeres HaTshuva. The vote is each mitzvah's essay. You're supposed to be bringing down a light, an ode of the key into the world. And if you miss the mitzvah, then the fact is that light is lacking, and you haven't brought it down, and therefore, there's no making it up later on. The pasuk can be the same pasuk, and Kehelis continues, something that's missing can't be counted. What does that mean? Means when people have counted themselves towards a mitzvah, people are getting together a group for a mitzvah. For example, Rashi says they're saying, let's say we're going on mitzvah, we're going on whatever mitzvah. Come with us. And now, and he doesn't join with them in the camp. So now they wound up doing the mitzvah. They wound up getting a bunch of kaftas or whatever, and he missed out on the opportunity. Marsha points out that another way of understanding it is, for example, that he daven b'yichidus. Here he had an opportunity to go join a minyan, and he chose instead to go and daven b'yichidus. So that's v'chesu and layuchal lehimanus. Marsha also points out another. Now we said it. The Gemara had mentioned shibitul tefillah shal shachris or shal arvis. So he missed Shemana Esrei of Shachris or of Ma'ariv. What about Mincha? Okay, one thing you could say is fine. It means Mincha, of course, as well. But we're mentioning Krishma, which is only twice a day, so therefore it also mentions the Tefillahs that are twice a day, but of course you really have three of them. The other possibility, Marsha says, think of it like this. We know the halacha is you miss Shachris, the Ba'onis, then you can daven two times Shemana Esrei by Mincha. You missed Mincha, you can daven two times Ma'ariv, and so forth. Well, you think about it, when it comes to Shachris, when are you making it up? Still the same day. Mincha is the same day as Shachris. You miss Ma'ariv, when are you making it up? By Shachris. Still the same day, because Vayhi Erev Vayivoker, the next morning is still part of the same day as the night before. But when it comes to Mincha, you're making it, if you're going to be making it up, if you're going to be davening the Tefillos Tashlumin, is by Ma'ariv, which is already the next day. So therefore, so it's still, you may have made it up. You made up that missed tefillah. Nevertheless, it's still in a certain sense more over. Because the fact is, so even with the other one, even with Shachris and with Ma'ariv, you're making them up. And it's still the same day. It's still more over. How much more so Mincha, where the making it up is not even on the same day. So Samarasha says that's another reason why the Gemara is, why the Braisa is mentioning only Shachris and Ma'ariv, because it's almost like a Kavu Chaymer. Even by those, how much more so by Mincha? So the Gemara says, Amale bar hei hei lehilo. My dichtin, in this connection, the Gemara goes on to discuss the importance of doing mitzvahs in a group and of not missing out on opportunity to serve Hashem. So bar hei hei asked hilo. The Pashtus, this bar hei hei is the same one that we have at the end of last week's Pirkei Avos. Ben hei hei umel from tzar agra. The Pashtus is the same one. I don't know for sure though. It's brought the famous thing that he and Ben Bagbag are both Gerim. They changed their name because they didn't want to be getting in trouble with the authorities, because at that time converting to Yiddishkeit was illegal, or at least semi-illegal. So they took like aliases for themselves, and Ben Hey Hey would be what is called that in particular, because Avraham and Sarah, they were the first Gerim, both had a Hey added to their names. Anyway, so he asks Hillel. The Hillel over here could be Hillel HaZaken, or it could be one of the later Chachamim named Hillel. Anyway, my dichtiv, Pasuk says in Malachi, v'shavtem re'isen ben tzadik l'rosha, you'll return, you'll look back, and you'll see the difference between the tzadik and the rosha. Tosfos actually mentioned this point about Bar Hei Hei, that he was a ger, and then the hay was added because of Avraham and Sarah. And then Bagbag also is a Beis Gimel, is also gematria hay. Although Mephoshim explained that Beis Gimel, that Bagbag stands for Ben Ger Ben Gioris. Anyway, so Bar Hei Hei asks him, so v'shavtem re'isen ben tzadik l'rosha, the pasuk says you'll return and you'll see the difference between the tzadik and the rosha, bein oved elikim la'asher la'avodeh, between the difference between the one who serves Hashem and the one who doesn't serve him. The pasuk is repetitious. Hainu tzadik, hainu oved elikim, hainu rosha, hainu la'avodeh. The tzadik is the one who serves Hashem, and the rosha is the one who doesn't serve Hashem. What's the difference? So Amalei, so he answered him, so Hillel answered him, or different girsa they have over here is in older Gemaras, is Ella, rather, that he answered his own question, Avodei, v'loi Avodei, tavayot tzadiki gmurin. No, the tzadik and the rosha, yeah, one's a tzadik, one's a rosha. The Ovid alekim and the Asher loi Avodei, they're both tzadiki. They're both tzadiki gmurin. Avol, ein adom, shona pirke, mea pomim, l'shona mea v'achas. You can't compare when he reviewed his learning 100 times versus when he reviewed it 101, where there he went beyond the normal thing. As the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, the normal practice in those days, where when everything was baal peh, is you learned everything that you learned, you would review 100 times. So the one who does 100 times is just sticking to the normal way of doing things. He's not going beyond his hair. The one who does 101 is going the extra amount, the extra mile, literally, as the Gemara is going to give the example over here. And therefore, he's considered Oved Elokim, because an Oved Elokim is somebody who goes beyond what his usual teva is, as the Alter Rebbe explains in detail over there in Perek Tesvav of Tanya. Anyway, so Marshall also points out that where do we go? Why Epis 100 and 101? So loy, so oved elikim laasher, the initials of that ayin aleph lamed equal 101. Meanwhile, loy avodoy is the lamed and the ayin is gematria 100. So therefore, that represents the 100 and the 101. He goes on to explain the deeper meaning of doing 100, which is that you're doing like maisim and a maisim, you're doing like trumas maisim, which is 100th, and then when you go beyond that, then it's chelik elikami mal. There's also a vote on it that says that Mechol, the Gematria of Mechol, is 101. So therefore, when a person learns 101 times, then it means that he has Malach Mechol together with him, and he's serving Hashem on a much higher level. I think there's some place also, I think, where Oblivi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, comments that the difference in Gematria between the word Zohar and the word Shochach is 101. Zohar is Zayin Chofresh. Is 227, Shochach is Shin Chof Ches, is 328. The difference is 101, representing the 101 that we're talking about over here, the ideal number of times you should review. You're telling me because the guy missed out one more time reviewing his learning, he's called Lo Yavodai. He didn't serve Hashem. Said Hillel tells him, sure. Go and see how it is in the when you go to hire a donkey driver, or, you know, to put it in modern terms, when you hire a taxi. Asora parasi bezuzah, to go 10 parasa, which is the standard amount that they usually go, you would pay him one zuz. Asra b'chad parasi, you want to go 11 parasi, you're only going one parasa more, which is only a couple of miles, but today zuzah, you're paying a whole nother zuz. So we see, in other words, that when you're going beyond your regilus, beyond what you normally do, then it's considered something so extra that you pay extra for it. So the same way, the one extra time over the 100 that this guy reviews his learning is so valuable in Hashem's eyes that it makes him, it puts him in a whole new level, and it makes him an oved Elokim. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula. See, where are we? Hey, Menachem Av. That I was talking about in the Yechidus and Tufshin and Beis, that we're nowadays in Yemos Mashiach, and all we need to do is open our eyes, and we'll already see that we have the Gula Amitis Vashlema in its simple sense. And most importantly, it happens with Poyol Mamish, it happens Lamata Masara Tvachim in our physical world in a way that we can see it to the extent where we're actually able to make a bracha on the birth and on the revelation of Mashiach, to be able to make the bracha Shechianu. And when you notice that Eber says, note the words in the bracha, Shechianu v'timonu v'higionu. The word v'higionu, the simple meaning is that Hashem made us reach this time, but v'higionu is also Meloshin Negiya, Hashem allowed us to touch. So we're talking about, in other words, that they'll come that when we actually see Mashiach, not only will see him, we'll actually be able to touch him, we'll actually be able to touch him tangibly, and therefore that gives us a new dimension in the meaning of the Baruch Hashem Yanu that we're going to say at that time. So I'm also not real sure where we're holding in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch throughout all this time. So I guess we'll start, for example, with the dinim. We'll start with Simon Pei Dalad, talking about dinim of wearing things out in the street. So the basic general rule is, if something is not considered a garment and it's not considered an ornament, then you're not allowed to go out with it to Rosh Hashanah or to Kanes. So an example would be a needle that's stuck in your clothes, and that means whether we're talking a needle or a pin. If it's a decorative pin, then that may be something different. But those are talked about in following Simonim. But here we're talking about a plain pin, like a push pin or something. Even for a man, you have to be machmir. Even if we're talking about that, you're doing it in order to hold the clothes together. On the other hand, women sometimes use pins like that to pin their tichels and other such things in place. So such things would be allowed on Shabbos, but even then it has to be a needle without a hole, because a needle with a hole has a chashivas of its own. You use it for sewing, and you're not mevatel it to use it for to use it for pinning up clothing. Then when it comes to jewelry and ornaments or whatever, there are all kinds of things where Chazal asked him to go out with it to Rosh Hashanah for various reasons. Some for men, some for women, some of them because they might take it off and then show off to their friends, some of them because they're loose and they might fall off, all kinds of different things. The minhag has developed to be matter. Many of them, poskim, have given various reasons for that, but nevertheless, Yerushalayim should be careful about it. One particular example is that a man is not allowed to wear a ring on Shabbos that doesn't have a seal on it, just like a plain wedding band or something. The Alter Rebbe actually adds that even if it has a signet, then a man shouldn't be wearing it nowadays either, but at least you shouldn't be moichin such a person. You also, a man can't wear a watch on Shabbos, we're talking about, for example, like a pocket watch. So if it's a pocket watch, then for sure there's no heter for it at all. If he wears it on his wrist or around his neck or something, then it's a tachet, then there's a little more room, but even so, it's not something that he should be wearing on Shabbos. Nowadays, many watches are digital. And you press the buttons and different things happen. So that's a whole nother issue. And those such watches are muktzah, to the best of my knowledge, are muktzah on Shabbos anyway. And there's not really any havam in being able to wear those.